Oh no, he's going to be making a card castle with bread, with a sandwich castle.
I'm just trying to build a 3D sandwich.
Now, is a sandwich castle a Big Mac? Is a Big Mac a bunk bed sandwich?
I feel like there should be an Aussie burger joint that's called the Castle. Dude, that would be amazing.
Patent pending.
Yeah. What sort of burgers are just references to the movie the whole time?
The pool room
burger. There's like, but all of the stuff is on the left hand side of the pool.
I think that would sell so well.
The trade and post. Yeah. the trade and post. But, oh my god.
It's just the vibe.
Yeah, I think it's
wholesome.
That's literally the motto. The castle. True. It's just the vibe.
Or it sounds like
what do you got on the menu? The Constitution. Marbo.
You got Marbo on the menu.
It's just the vibe.
Oh, no.
Whatever the chef's feeling that day, it's just the vibe.
See, the thing is, all of these references will not make any sense to any of our international listeners.
No. We got plenty of Aussie listeners. We'll get a little bit of
that. Yeah,
that's gold.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 41 of the Board Game Gateway podcast. My name is Nima, and I am your host for this evening, and I am joined by two of my lovely hosts once again for a talk and a wander into the world of the board games. To my left, I've got Mr. Matt.
G'day.
And to my right, I've got Mr. Ralph.
Hey, everyone.
And this is the first time that you are joining us on the podcast, welcome. It's lovely to have you here. We are your entryway into the world of board gaming, tabletop gaming, and fun times. I nearly forgot the last bit at the end. I'm like, what are fun times?
And
the
vibes.
Just the vibes, yeah.
The vibes.
I like it.
Oh, I absolutely should have done it. I'm gonna try. Board gaming, tabletop gaming, and the vibe.
The vibe.
Yeah.
I
guess that kind of works.
No, that's just it's just the
God.
Vibe.
On tonight, on today's podcast, we are going to be talking about a few games. We're going to be talking about a newly Kickstarter deliverable called Micro Cosmos, which has just made our way into the Australian boarding, into the shore. We're also going to be talking about a Martin Wallace classic, Anno 1800. And then we're going to be chatting about a couple more card games. We do like to talk about card games on this podcast.
We're talking about small games you can slap with your hands.
Yes, we're going to be talking about Card Game Mania. We're going to be madness, if you will. The games of Slam Witch, Taco Cat, Goat Cheese Pizza, and Walk the Plank. But yeah, this is going to be a fun one. Let's get straight into it, though. And we're going to have a chat about the game called Micro Cosmos. I'm going to just take you through this game very quickly. So Micro Cosmos is by a company who their whole philosophy is about having the small boxes in front of us. I'm going to bring it right inside because it's within arm's reach. Here it is. It is by Thirst Roy Games. Here it is. It's a little box. It literally fits maybe.
Thirst Roy or is it This Troy?
This Troy? There is no R, is there?
There's no R.
This Troy.
Thirst Trap.
Oh, I don't know if they'll be having me calling them that. Anyway, but this game is a little bit of an engine-building Euro sci-fi game. Now, the way that this game works is that every player has a ship, and in that ship, we are going to be getting crew members. Those crew members will be able to strengthen and do specific actions in the game. We'll be doing resource conversion. We'll be upgrading our ship. We'll be taking survivors off of planets that we want to terraform, and we are going to then recolonize these settlers on worlds. You win the game by a few different ways. The first way is resettling survivors of these broken planets or in the universe, which is a 3x3 grid. As it says, it's a micro sort of game. You can also get victory points by terraforming one of the 8 planets that are out on the board. The person who does the most amount of terraforming of any of these planets and gets them to their fully terraformed rating gets victory points. And the game ends when 3 of the planets are fully terraformed. So you can still get victory points for not fully terraforming planets, but you still want, like, to terraform a planet, you need to basically get resources and put those resources into the planet, like, hey, we need to, you know, get the terraforming rating up there. Why this game is really cool and what this is, Matt, we'll have a chat about this. We played a game day.
I can't wait to talk about this
one. We played a game day here at my house. And we decided to play this game first. Now, I will admit, this is one of those games where I said, look, I have not watched the YouTube video and I haven't properly learned how to play it. So let's just learn together through the rule book. Are you okay with that? And everyone, yep, let's do it. We did three players. It was great. And we did it. And the main engine part of this game, which we haven't explained, is the crew. Mm-hmm. Now, the way that it works is that in your crew, you can have up to six crew members. And the rule book says what is important about the crew is that there is a upper deck of your crew and a lower deck of your crew. Basically, the top side and bottom side of your crew compartment, right? What you can do then is if you go to a planet of one of the colors, there are three colors, red, blue, or green. If you go to a planet of that color, you can activate a crew member of the associated color, right? So if we go to the red planet, congratulations, all of your red crew members can activate, okay?
And that's all of them.
And that's
just
all
one of them.
Well, up to two. Up to two.
Oh, is it?
Up to two.
Now, I see. I missed that one as
up well. Up to two crew members. But that can be really powerful. Now, that's how I read the rule book at the start of the game. I made a very big boo-boo, which is that...
No,
I...
you didn't. No, no, don't. That's...
Okay.
Okay. What we need to actually explain here is what Nee does very, very well... is that he reads the rules very, very well and gets about 90% of it down pat, right? Without actually playing the game. And that's a skill. Like, we give Nee a lot of crap because this happens a lot. But it's a skill
it does.
That you can, you, without playing the game, which is really how you learn a game, he understands it. But in that 10%, there's usually one or two crucial rules that lock it all into play.
Yeah.
So we were playing this for probably about an hour. And I made a couple of comments like,
including the
this
team.
Seems a bit redundant and I don't understand why the point of this is. And yeah, it wasn't bad, but like, what the hell?
And Tom started making comments of like, some things seem a little bit busted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was like, some things seem a bit broken here. They don't seem to like, you seem to have some very powerful
stuff.
Yeah,
Nee's powering
moment.
Ahead. I'm like, hell, that doesn't make any sense because it's not.
Because I win.
He wasn't making better choices or yeah. Like he had a little bit of better luck with some of the card delivery, but. You know, not that much.
There is one other thing, which is that you need to get these what are called leaders. Mm-hmm. And leaders are essentially, like, some things require you to have a prerequisite of, like, I need to spend a red crew. Like, crew members are your actions and your resource conversion. They are also your action points.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you'll go to a planet, and the way that you get survivors onto your ship is you need to spend the associated color crew worker, mm-hmm. to be able to get the survivors, but then that crew worker is discarded, right? So you want to have the red, maybe red guys in there so you can get survivors. However, you can also have what are called red leaders or different colored leaders to be able to get, though, like you can spend the leader instead, which is like a little token that says he's either on or he's off. You also get an engineer and you need the engineer to be able to get specific upgrades and things as well. So you need to find engineer crew cards and leaders. So that's very important. Now, what we didn't realize, and this is where the rub comes into the game, why this game all of a sudden is really good, Ralph, what we really like about it, is remember how at the beginning of this rules explanation I said that there's a top row and a top like crew compartment and a bottom crew compartment?
Yep.
What we didn't realize and why I missed it is it's not bolded in the rule book, which is when a crew member is on the bottom row of your compartment, you'll notice that the top row of their resource conversion isn't that great, but the bottom is. Because when it's in the bottom row, you can use their resource conversion, your action. And then you have a choice. You can either discard it, the crew member, or you can move that crew member to the top of your crew. And next time you go to the color associated with that action, you get an even more powerful action.
Oh, okay. That sounds really
cool. It is really cool.
However, but if you place him in the top row and that's his first port of call,
yep.
He only gets that... big activation, and then he disappears.
Once they they activate their
so
top
placement of your worker,
yeah,
that's right.
You want
really
to try and get the most out of a worker. You want to put them in the bottom row,
yep.
And then you want to move so you can get their first action to move them up to the second action. And generally, their planets change. So like,
we didn't even know you had to get rid of them out of your ship, right? Yep. So we were playing along and had six crew members, and just I'll just use him, and knees. Reactivating this, you know, one of
this
the
tableau.
I got pretty lucky in getting one.
But then we realized, oh no, that's meant to feed into the deck, and you know, there's also three crew members face up in the middle at the bar that you could, you know, take a shot at with a certain move, right? And I said, what's the point of the bar? They're sitting there. I've got just as much luck just drawing from the deck randomly. And then as soon as we saw they were like, oh, yeah, okay. If you want a specific action to make the next move really stick, you got to organize your, you know, your every... The game went from being, yeah, this is a little bit of fun and a bit of a space theme, to being everything I do in this game impacts everything else.
That's the sign of a good game.
Yeah. It really did. And literally for the next 10 minutes after that moment of when we... So after
you made that connection.
Well, no, because what Tom kept saying, something seems wrong here. And I said, look, because I've already read the rule book, I know I'm probably missing something, but I need you now to look at it and find a bit. So yeah, here, I'll like
you
say...
You mean the rule pamphlet?
Yeah, the rule, it is. Like, it fits into the box. So if the guys here, if they are actually watching this, hello, lovely to have you here. The one gripe that I had was that in this paragraph, it literally has it bolded. It says, on their player, a player may play up to two crew cards. Bolded, right?
Yep.
So my mind was instantly drew to that part of the rule book. The next part it said... Literally, the next sentence, but it wasn't bolded. If they are playing a card from the lower, you discard and move it up. The exact rules that we were talking about. But because it wasn't bolded, my mind initially went, it's probably not as important as that bolded section.
Yeah.
And then when I read it, I went, oh, they really needed to bold that section. But that's enough about griping about that little bit, right? Because I want to, like, that's a little gripe, and that was my fault for not reading the rule book correctly.
To be honest, like, I'm pretty impressed already just by the description of this game.
We
didn't even finish the game.
No.
Right? We played another hour and a half and we're like, there's so much in this tiny box.
Yeah, like you need
to
do it
again. And our brains were gone, we need a proper sit-down.
I've had a few games where it's like you go through the setup, you learn the rules, and it's like, oh, my mind is melting right now.
We did a full reset. So we're like, no, we're going to go back to the beginning. And
we're
properly.
Like, look, let's reset and let's just see what happens.
Technically played 2 hours of this game with two games that we didn't finish either of them, but we're all going, we need to get this.
And so initial impressions are positive.
Very positive. Very positive. And that's the thing, which is like that little gripe aside, because it was my fault. The game itself, for what the package is and what it offers and how it presents it, it was one of my surprise hits. When we played it, we're like,
And this is the thing, right? It's not even just what's in front of you. There's only 9 tiles in front of you of the different planets, and they each have space routes to get to them, right? And you...
So we have
limited to 4 moves at first. 4
two,
space
two
jumps.
Moves.
Is it? Oh,
two.
No,
two.
It's 4 at first, isn't it?
It's 2. It's 2.
It's 4, 6, 8.
Oh, maybe. Yeah,
four,
maybe it
four,
is.
4, 6, 8.
Yeah, okay. Maybe it was.
Or 3 something. I don't know. Whatever it was. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So even that, right? Getting around the board is hard at first. And you can choose to, jump down the pathway of giving your ship a couple of extra boosts so it's easier to move. But at the detriment of... other capacities of your ship, maybe your crew capacity, or not your storage capacity and things like that. So
is there any player interaction on this?
Yes, there is. It's minimal. Like there are things like you can get in the way of space routes. So like, for example, I can stop on a... so we haven't even mentioned a few things in terms of the ship upgrades.
So you can stop in the middle of the road.
So you have planets which can host as many players as you want. Uh-huh. But getting before the planet, there are moons and there are space stations. And those ones can only host one player ship at a time.
Okay.
So you can get in the way of each other there. But in general, it's more of a race format, which is that I'm not here to get in your way.
It's engine building.
Very much engine building race format.
And as I said, like, there's so many little niggly bits of this thing that like, on first read, I must admit, when we first played, I was like, there's just too many things going on. As soon as it locked into place, I was like, no, there's exactly the right amount of things to keep you guessing of your own board, let alone... There's no time to look at anyone else's. Like, you've got to spend the time between turns going, all right, how do I, what's the next thing, right? And it's not a one move thing. It's a multi-phase action.
It sounds like a pretty heavy game.
For a tiny box, it packs a punch.
For the box.
It sounds heavier than Gaia Project to me.
No, it's not. There are a few things that we haven't mentioned, such as, for example, when you have to upgrade your ship to be able to get these colony tokens. If I can place a colony on a planet, I can increase how quickly I can terraform it. So you may be trying to upgrade your ship to get that. There are also trading posts, which you can only ever have two of them, but they're another way of getting victory points, which is anytime I place a trading post down, I immediately get two VP, which is great. But the other benefit is that normally you can only get the resources of a planet by stopping there. However, if I put a trading post down, anytime any player goes to that planet, I get the resources.
That's cool.
So there are a few things that
I suppose the
really
last
do.
Interaction would be that if you've terraformed 80% of the planet, I can come in and terraform the last 20% and I actually get the winning, like that's my,
oh,
that's
you get,
my
you,
points.
You get the last hit sort
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, yep. You can absolutely do that. So there's a few things there which we can actually do.
So there is that little, you know.
Yeah, it's like, that, do that, I want to give Nii another resource by going to his trading yeah. post, that sort of thing yes. as well.
And I think it would be better, is it play to four? Yeah, four players.
Plays up at four, yes.
Like it would be better with the full four. Like it'd be pretty intense, but I think you need the full four players to really get that total interaction of everywhere you go, there's already something.
There's someone
happening.
There because yeah.
there was a couple of dead spots in the map
we found. What ended up happening was that we had all three of us go to one corner of the night 3x3 grid, but then all of a sudden I went big into movement in my ship very early and I bug it off to the other side of the galaxy and they're like, oh crap, Nii's over there by himself.
It's kind of like getting... Ticket to Ride, everyone's on one side of the board.
Yeah. And the board doesn't reveal itself at the beginning of the game either. So it reveals
fun.
As you explore.
Nice.
So it's, you know, it was the luck of the draw with a couple of those cards as well. So
yeah.
there is that variability each
That's
game
pretty exciting though.
Yeah.
But this company, they also just finished their Micro Architects campaign and I hadn't played this game before that campaign ended, and had I would have insta-backed it because yeah. like the amount of game that they packed into this box, and I've also got the expansion that we haven't played with. There's a couple of expansions that we can play with, expansion modules. I think that they are very good. Their whole ethos is let's make the best, most amount of game that we can for the smallest package that we can, and I really recommend it.
Yeah. I just had a quick flick through the rule book. There is a solo variant
yes,
of
there
it
is.
As well, which is, by the sounds of it, it's just an Audemars deck of cards as well that, you know, you take a turn, the game takes a turn, and you go up against that one other opponent. So it looks pretty simple to flow and manage as well.
So this is the expansion, New Worlds and Old Authorities. And in here, there is actually a solo campaign book.
That sounds like my workplace.
Yeah. But yeah, so there is a solo campaign that you can go through if this is something that you would think you really enjoy. So
yeah,
it does just have a solo automata.
But it's also good like to go through the rules and learn it beforehand as well. Yes. Like you can easily play a half a solo game or something too.
Yeah, and that's actually something, just a quick sidestep. I'm currently doing that with the game of Hegemony. We were going to play that as our second game because my brother Nick rocked up.
Yep.
And I made the snap decision. I said, I'm not...
You're like, oh, well, we can't play Cosmos because this is Microcosmos. Like, you know.
No, we were going to play that. And I was like, look, I don't know the game well enough. And I feel like this is a game that I need to know better. And I probably may play an automata solo game of that so I can actually learn the game.
Yeah, that's like,
them.
Tends to be a heavier one. You generally try and, not, you don't necessarily have to play it yourself. But I always like to go through get all the components out and learn how the system flows.
Yeah, me too.
And
look, next time I probably will do more. But I really just wanted to play it. And I can't recommend
it
highly enough. It's really good. Anyway, so that's Microcosm.
Can you buy this retail now?
I don't believe so yet. I believe it's still fulfilling, but I believe it's coming out soon. So that was Microcosmos by, not Thirst, was it? Thistroy.
Thistroy
Games.
Not Thistroy.
Not Thistroy. Yeah,
Thistroy.
Thistroy, maybe. Who knows? Anyway, but from there, we played another game on that game, Dave. And Ralph, you weren't there, but you have played this game.
I
introduced Matt, Tom and my brother Nick to the game of Anno 1800.
Anno.
Do either of you two want to try and explain to the audience what Anno 1800 is?
No, I can't.
I'm terrible.
I'll explain the little games.
All right, you can explain the little games. I'll go for 1800.
It's just a big engine tableau builder thing. It's really fun.
That's
like,
what
really
it is.
Good.
So
yeah.
Anno, it really is. All right, yeah. Anno 1800 is a game by Martin Wallace. And he is a well-known designer in the board game space. And this one is a very... It's really weird to kind of explain to everyone what it actually is because it is basically production line the board game, which is...
It's kind of like Animal Crossing in a way. Like, you know, like crafting in general.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you get two items in a video game and it makes this third thing.
Yeah, no,
it's kind of like satisfactory.
The board game.
Satisfactory. Yeah, actually, yeah. That's actually a really apt way of putting it. Yeah, for the, any of the video games out there, satisfactory. The board game.
So, base resources turn into secondary resources,
and it doesn't have to make sense.
Turn into tertiary resources, but you can also borrow resources from other players or trade with them, and yeah.
Yeah. So the way this game works is it literally. So it is based.
It's just endless, isn't it?
It just kept going, that bloody game. I loved it, but it just never ends.
It does have the theme, the licensing name of the Anno 1800 game series, which is a video game like city builder based in like old Victorian England sort of thing. The way the game works is that we each are basically old Victorian, you know, men of business and industry, and we are trying to make. Essentially, we get given a whole bunch of cards at the beginning of the game which tell us things that we need to make to be able to score victory points. If we can make this particular good, like, for example, shirts, vodka.
There's light bulbs.
Light bulbs.
Yeah. A steam engine. Machine.
Steam engines. Yeah, steam engine. Glass.
Cannons, warships.
Artillery shells, yeah. etc.
Or just bricks. Whatever you want.
There's at least 60 or like about 50 or so different industries on this center board. And each industry can only be built twice. So only two people can ever have it. You can only ever have one of any industry on your personal player board.
Well, what I like about that is like if I need that thing that Nate built, I can still take it. He gets a bit of a kick.
Exactly right. And so on your personal player board, you have 20 spaces in which you can put stuff. You have 5 rows. You start with some very basic industries, and you also start with a couple of ships. Ships in this game basically can either be trading vessels, which is what Ralph explained. You can use trading vessels to use trading symbols and to use other people's industries. If you do, you actually give that player some extra gold. And the way that the game works is that on your turn, you have little cubes, and those cubes represent different levels of worker, from the very basic, you know, just factory workers up to like middle managers, up to investors and university lecturers / professors. But the meat and potatoes of this game is looking at your hand of cards and it telling you what it is you need to build, because the game ends when one person completely empties their hand by having produced everything in their hand. You can get more production, population cubes, of which represent new workers. But every time that you get new workers,
you get new cards.
You get new cards. So that means there's more stuff you need to produce.
When he was explaining to me, my first thought was, this game will never end.
Like, yeah,
and it did feel like that at one point. It did feel like that at one point in the game where you're like, no one seems to
every
have the
time,
industry.
Like, I'm putting these. Like I was, my middle game was pretty strong, and I was knocking down points, going. I'm just restocking my hand. I want to finish.
It kind of felt like the movie Titanic. Like, the ship's going to sink. You think it's going to end soon. It doesn't. And then you realize it was a good movie the whole time.
Yeah. No, it does feel like that. And the reason why you'd probably like this game is because there's something very... Like, we had a moment in our game, Ralph, with me, you, and Blake.
Yep.
We had this moment where we finally started to look at our real high-value industry cards, what we needed. And Blake at this moment where he went, all right, I need that. But that means I need to make that. But that means I need to make that and that. And I don't, what the hell? Where do I get all this? And he realized there was this massive chain. And then but this is where the trading comes into it, which is that I don't need to build everything because someone else could build it for me.
Well, you can't build everything as well.
Yeah, exactly right. You can't. And so this is where.
But you also have to manage your trading enough so that you can't just take whatever you need.
Yeah, that's right. You need to build those trading ships.
That's right. You have to have the capacity to actually trade to use that.
You
function.
Also
it's
have,
a fun game. I want to play it again. Just it talking about it to be honest.
Look,
yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
You also have limited capacity in your own city, your own player board, because each industry that you build can only be used a maximum of twice before your workers have to go end of shift
that's
and go away.
I think I did it twice in our game there where. Like, there's a point in the game where once you allocate all your workers, you can take a turn just to refresh
festival.
Them. They do a festival, they go back home, and they
we
can work
festivaling
again.
We were all the time.
But that's the thing. I found I put one or two workers out, and then I festival again just to do that move again because it's so optimal for me at that point. Like,
there was a couple of times where I had one move, put two workers out. I was like, oh, no, I'm bringing them back.
I need to get those guys out again.
It's either I festival now or I festivaled four moves.
But that was also because you didn't have a lot of gold. Because you can also bring workers back. It's the equivalent of paying them overtime. And by paying them overtime, you can just bring a worker back and then use them again to do stuff, right? Which is a really cool thing. Now, in the game that we played with Matt, Tom, and Nick, I was the only one who built two really important middle-tier industries like shirts and gin. right? I didn't think they'd be very important.
Everyone needs those things.
Well, absolutely right.
Well, how do you clean your shirt? With gin. With gin. Why do you need to clean your shirt? Because it's got gin on it.
That's right.
Exactly right.
It's a cycle.
But I bought those two because I needed them for my production line that I was working on. And then it turned out that everyone else started to need them.
And then everyone went,
well, Nee's got them. Why do I need to buy them?
Yeah.
And so that meant I just started raking in the gold.
Yeah.
And I could use that gold to get workers back and not have to spend a turn. Because if you do a festival, that's your entire turn gone. You don't get to do anything else. And so it's like very bit, but it gives people a chance to be very optimal. It does give a chance to have some AP, like analysis paralysis at the end of the game when you're like thinking, I need so this, much. But that means I need that. And to get that, I need this. And that'll get me the points that should end the game.
It is very satisfactory. I've got to build a supercomputer. Okay, I need 18,000 wire. Oh, God.
No, it's not just that. Like,
but to get the wire, I need copper.
It's that constant dopamine hit when you like successfully build something and then you successfully build the next thing and the next thing. It just keeps going and going and going. And then you get halfway through it and you're like, when does the game end? It took me a while to break past that. When does the game end?
That was my problem is that I had a couple of really good turns in a row and it was only mid-game.
And it was so optimal, right?
Well, that's right.
But yeah.
Because I've never played it before, I didn't realize that that's where we were. So I was thinking, surely I'm now finishing the game, right? And then I ran out of steam because I've used literally all the steam, as it turned out. And so I think I came second, didn't I?
You did. You were like,
enough to kind of push me to the end.
Yeah, same.
But there was no last minute spur of, okay, go, because I used everything I really had.
It's kind of felt like you're going the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
This game is the epitome of a constant burn. It will not come to a sudden thunk.
No.
You know what this game is? This is the logs in Back to the Future 3.
It is.
There are moments of explosion where the first log's the blown, first the second first log's blown.
About to blow, the third log's about to blow.
Is that the
steam engine
one?
You know what? That's a really good app because I do think because there were three moments in this game where it was the first tier of everything is going and people are like, okay. There was a bit of a lull and then there was the second tier of where people were going, I need ships and I need this mid-tier stuff and everyone, and then everyone went, sweet, we got it. And then the third tier was we all realized, well, we need to score big points, right. And we need the third tier.
There's a maximum of five turns left. Oh,
and then everyone just went boom, 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 and we're trying to build as much as we could or use as much as we could without giving points away. And it really did actually, now that you say that, it's three phases metaphor, in this game.
That's right. I really enjoyed this game.
I really did.
I can't wait to play it again, to be honest, because like it's exciting, especially when you start and there's that fresh slate. And now that I know how all the cogs turn.
Mm.
Kind of keen to dive back into that one.
If you're a fan of Satisfactory or Factorio or any of these production line resource management games, like this is literally the game that's just like, it's for you.
It's for you. It's, for sure.
It's one of those.
I feel like it can use with a rules reference card a little bit.
Yep. There is also, and there is also an unofficial advanced rules that have come.
James put that in the chat.
So they are the official advanced rules. And there are a couple of things that just change the early game. It also changes how much gold you get for having more important resources and a few things like that.
So it gives you more viable options during the game.
Yeah. So one of the things that we said was it felt weird that I had a very high level. And I'd spent a lot of time to get a really high level sort of resource, a thing, and it was worth the same amount of gold as a brick. There is changes that where it is actually worth more gold to have those, and it means it.
In one sense, though, I liked that because it kept it simple, right? The base movements were simple, but you still had to achieve them to complete your own action. So, adding in an actual market to the higher range goods would certainly be an advancement, like that would just add a whole new spin on the game. And I'll give it a go. I would play it with you. But something that I don't know if it needs.
There are only three changes to the actual rule set for the advanced rules, and so there's actually not a lot there. So you don't have to worry about it.
I suppose you are also paying more depending on the worker type as well in that industry.
Yeah, so to reset. There already is that. There's obviously a whole bunch of few considerations. Now, we haven't talked about a few things in the game. Like, there is the new world cards that are like,
that
expand
was weird.
Your shore. There is the
new
world.
That was all right. The
other one where it's like you basically.
The exploring thing.
Yeah, it's
weird.
Basically. Yeah. It does have has the exporting or importing of goods that you essentially have. used the what they call the new world of, like, you know, these can be things like cocoa, sugarcane, cotton, things like that. So the implication is there of, like, you know, cheap, you know, native workers, like, labor.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's never any references officially, you know, to any slavery or anything like that. But the implication is kind of there if you kind of understand the 1800s and where they probably were going to
I
get
I think
that.
If you're an educated about that, you'll put two and two together on that. But I think that's hard to avoid that side of history.
Especially when you're doing it around this industrial time and around the 1800s sort of thing. But it doesn't
affect
the game.
There's no actual references to it. Like, it's not as if it's... No. You know, you have to have slaves to get cotton kind of thing. Like,
no, unless you start industry. Like in your group, call it the slavery tile or something like that's a different thing. But the game doesn't call it that.
I will say every single one of the New World tiles, though, does have cotton. So the implication is there is that that was one of the main exports and imports that they grabbed. So, you know, but, you know, like it's really a blip. It's not really anything you need to worry about so much. No. But other than that, though, the game itself, like we said, if you're into Factorio or Satisfactory or any of those kind of, you know, production line games, this is a game for you.
Yeah, it was pretty simple. Like, there's a lot of games where you do the resource conversions and, like, sometimes other things trigger other things. That didn't really happen here. It was literally like, okay, well, I have these two things. I just, that entitles me to build this other thing. Mm. And then that was it. Then you move on.
Yes. Yeah, so I just want to build this. I want to build this production resource. Cool. I need this and this. I have them and I have the cubes. Sweet. Move them, grab it, and we're good to go. And
it just flew.
All right, we're going to go from, that was anno 1800, and we are going to go from that by Martin Wallace. We're going to go from that now into a few smaller, lighter games, because here in the Board Game Gateway, we love our small, light card games, and we've got a few more that we'd like to share with you on tonight's podcast. We're going to go through three. The first one is going to be, this is our Gateway Games of the Week. These are all three. We've decided to do three of them here because we just freaking love these games and we want to share with them. So the first one we're going to share with you is called Slamwich. Matt, I'm going to pass this one to you. I want you to explain why this one is a great Gateway game, what this Gateway game is, and you know, why it frustrated the hell out of us in a great way.
Frustrated everyone but you. You won the damn thing.
Yeah, that's true. It did.
Slamwich, in essence, is Snap on steroids.
Yep.
This is...
with vegetables.
I was about to say, it's Slap on yeast. And I went, that's not great.
Oh, no. That sounds like a sunscreen.
Oh God.
You'll understand why in a second. Why.
So we're playing with pieces of bread that have ingredients on them, condiments and vegetables and bacon and God knows what else.
Not actual pieces of bread, obviously. These
not
are
actual. Well, you probably could. That would be an interesting game.
You could.
Oh, imagine the jam and stuff. Oh.
But yeah, you'd have to be ready for a big cleanup.
That sounds like a no rolls barred video of ever I've heard on. We play Slamwich with the actual ingredients.
How would they do that? I have a table underneath and they just grab blindly?
I want to see it happen. Let's see it.
That would be pretty funny.
So essentially there is, standard condiments, jam and peanut butter. There is tomatoes and lettuce. There is... pickles and eggs and all sorts of things on top of these pieces of bread on our cards. And in standard Snap type rules, you are looking to make a pair. So if you are seeing the same item come up twice, you slam your hand down, you get the pile. But there are a couple other rules. The second rule is that you can make a slamwich.
Yep.
Which is one ingredient followed by a second ingredient followed by the first ingredient again. So it doesn't really matter what the first ingredient is. It can be egg followed by jam followed by egg, and that's a slamwich. Same as a normal snap, but with an extra piece of something in between the two slices. And the third way you would slam is with the thief.
Mm-hmm. There are three of them in the deck.
Apparently there's one of them.
Only three of them. I feel like they came out so often.
There's only three of them. Yeah.
Looks like is this designed by a French designer by any chance?
I think it is a French game.
Yeah, potentially. Because
there's this kind of French cartoon-esque kind of dude.
I don't have my phone on me to check it in the middle of the podcast. But
I'll check it out. I'm curious.
Yeah, the illustrations were done by Annie Campbell, by the way. So I don't know, but it is published by Game Right Games.
But anyway, so if there is a thief and the thief gets played, you can slam down on the thief because he's trying to steal your entire stack. So he or she doesn't need their matching component in order to slam your slamwich. But that's it. It's just Snap, trying to get the most cards. Well, trying to get all of the cards, I suppose. How many players does it play up to?
Up to six players, it says. But realistically, you can play this game like you would regular like Snap. Regular you play it with as many people as you want. And yeah,
the game's by a US designer, actually.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Yeah.
But yeah, I like it's fun. It's fast. It's frustrating because I'm not fun or fast. Well, sorry, what? Did I miss something?
See, you are fast.
Not when it comes to Snap. But no, it was good fun. Quick learn. What? Took us 3 minutes to really learn the rules, and then we started playing.
Yeah. There you go. It can frustrate you at the start because you're like, one, you need to learn the new symbols. You don't officially know what all the ingredients are. So you're like, oh, a new symbol. Oh, my God.
Now that you said that, you're right. With a deck of cards, I know what's coming out. I know how to count numbers. I was so confused when the mushrooms and capsicums came out. I was like, I've never seen that before. Where's that from? Yeah. There's only two of them in the entire deck, I think.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's a few of them. But, like, so, you know, you're looking out for, your mind is like, well, I got to look out for the thief, and I got to look out for a regular Snap. But then there's this thing called a slamwich, and you're like, oh, my God, I need to keep an eye out for that.
To get your head around the slamwich, it's not intuitive enough. Yeah. Like, it's not super quick. It takes you a few times of missing it before you realize what you're looking for.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got used to it. Like, but then I felt out of rhythm with the game. But I guess that happens with any sort of Snap game, right?
Matt got angry, and then he got good, and then he fell out of sync because he wasn't angry anymore.
I do like how all the cards are like little cutouts of bread, like little croutons and things as well.
I kind
of
hate it. I hate that their shape is bread because my OCD goes, if they're upside down, they don't fit perfectly. And I'm like,
I've just rethought them all up to the hallway.
So they're all, if you're on the YouTube.
It's good that it's sliced bread already.
Yeah, so. if you're on the YouTube channel, go at BG Gateway into the YouTube search bar and you'll be able to find us right now. But this is what the bread looks like and it's not symmetrical. So if you get one way and one the other.
Do you want to really annoy Nate?
They're just out of alignment. It just feels weird, right?
Here's what I prepared earlier.
It's fine. Like as I did. If it feels really weird.
Put them in the right order.
It annoys me that you can't make a card tower out of them. Like I was trying to make a sandwich tower before. They just won't lean on.
How about that, hey? That's
how much for sandwich? What did you pay for this?
I literally paid $12 for this one.
Yeah, I think
worth every penny.
If it's not on sale, it's usually like a $20 game.
It is.
But it's a good little kids game.
It's a good kids game. It's basically just a more fancy deck of cards, but you can only play it one way. Now I will say there is a little extra module that you can play, which are these called the Munchers. Basically, they add an extra rule and a bit of extra faff that I honestly think you can leave the game. Basically, the Munchers say they have three values on them, 1, 2, and 3. And if the Muncher comes out, the person to the left of the player who played the Muncher, so if I played a Munch card, I become the Muncher. The person to the left has to deal out however many cards are on the number of the Munch card. And then if one of the three ways that you can get, you know, a slamwich, a double decker, or the thief come out, then everyone at the table gets to do the slam like they normally would, right? The Muncher does as well, but everyone else gets to have a chance at it. But if one of those three ways does not come up in those whatever the next card value is, then the Muncher gets the pack of cards. Essentially, it's like, okay, like I've told you right now that I'm about to steal or munch on this.
Are they just randomly in the deck? They're
randomly in the deck. Yes. Oh, okay. So, but then the only other way that you can stop someone from munching on the pile is by having a munch card of yourself. So I steal the Muncher. Okay. So basically, it's a way of saying to the people, hey, I'm about to win this pile. You better hope that it comes out. Now it can keep everyone on edge because everyone's like, okay, three cards. Please, Matt. We're like, Matt, your cards are coming out right now. Please. And everyone's just on edge.
I can see that. Yeah, you're right. Like, I'm glad we didn't play that because I don't think it's necessary.
To me, there's too many, like, if statements in it.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't quite. Like, I think in a game as quick as Snap or Slamwich, you're not going to register what's going on there.
They do say in the rule book, this we understand. They basically say in the rule book that, hey, if you want to play a lighter, faster game that's better for younger children, just don't play with the Munch cards.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say just play Snap.
No, I can see the value in them. I do think it could add this little interesting value of everyone hyper-focusing on what's about to come out. But you don't need it. The game itself is literally just just adds a couple of fancy things.
And I think from a learning, like board games, rules and stuff, it's a good advancement against Snap. So, you know,
definitely. It's a decent jump.
Yeah.
I just think, like, you can even do, like, food fight variant where you literally play a card in front of any player you want, trying to make a combo. Like, that could be pretty fun, just like throwing cards at each other.
Yeah, that could actually be a lot of fun. I think like, take the thief
the food
out.
Fight variant.
Yeah, yeah, like, why not? Why not?
That's good.
It's got potential.
I think that's good. Anyway, so that's Slam Witch. That's the first of our three gateway games of the week. We're going to move on this one. And Ralph, we're going to go to the next one, which is Taco Cat Goat's Cheese Pizza. We're going to come to that one.
Yeah.
Because like, if you like silly games that cause you to slap cards down on the table, then this one's also a great one.
Yeah, so Nick showed me Slam Witch not long ago and really enjoyed it. And it reminded me a bit of Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza, which has been covered quite a bit in the Australian podcast realm. I know the barbecue guys absolutely love this game. We do too. And essentially what this game is, it's a small deck of cards, and on the back of the card it says Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. And snap rules, you play one card in the center and you say the word taco. Okay? And then the next person plays the next card.
I would then have to say cat and flip over my card.
Yeah, and then Matt, next person in the circle, you say
goat?
Yep.
Nailed it. And then if that card was a goat when you said goat, that is when the snap rule applies. That is
then
when
everyone
you
can slam and try and
but if not, you keep going in the same sequence. And if you say the incorrect word, you take the pile. If you flinch, you take the pile.
Ugh.
Now, there
I
are,
haven't even played this game and I've already lost. I can
it's
tell
a
you,
fantastic
it
game.
It's so good. It's a lot of fun. I really do. We're going to be playing it at GoobaCon.
Yeah, I'll have to
it.
Bring it. There's three other cards, though. So they're not all just pictures of tacos and cats and pizza. But there are cards like the narwhal. Okay? And when the narwhal comes out, I know it makes sense. Stay with me. When the narwhal comes out, everyone has to make a little cone, little triangle, and like as if they have a horn, like a unicorn. And the last player to do that takes the pile. Mm-hmm. The other one is a grout. the other, I'm losing Matt here, guys.
No, yeah, but last week.
The last.
I've just had one too many fever dreams in the last week.
Two,
that's all.
There's only two more, Matt.
There's two more, Matt. Stay with me. The next one is a gorilla, and when the gorilla comes out, you have to beat your chest.
Yeah.
The last player to do that takes the pile.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and the last one is a groundhog, and that's where you have to beat on the table. Last player to do that. Now again, if you flinch or do the incorrect thing, you take the pie
or say the wrong word
or say the
sequence.
Wrong word. And don't forget, snap rule still applies. So if I say a cat and it's a cat, you snap. And what also messes with you, the colors, all the cards change colors, and it's ridiculous, but it's a lot of fun.
I have played this.
Yeah,
there's a couple of other variants. There's like a Christmas one that we've got, and there's a different one, and they will have some subtle different rules or different animals, and you do different things, but it's always the same game.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
It's also really a very small box. Again, it's like even smaller than Slamwich. It literally...
You can get both these games at like EB Games.
Yeah, they're
too.
Real, real cheap, like $18 or something like that. Really cheap. They are great little parties intro games. I really enjoy both of them. They always make it out for like, for big game days where it's like, hey, we just need something to get us warmed up and getting going. Like you pull either of those two out and it just becomes a real, real fun time.
Yeah.
It's great. So that was Slamwich, and then that was Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. And the final one that we have is, Matt, a game that's been in your collection for a while, but you finally decided to pull it out. And we have now played it a few times and we're really happy. And that is Walk the Plank. This one is the Deluxe Edition. Tell us about this one.
Ooh, Deluxe. Ooh.
So, this is a Kickstarter that probably came around in my early addiction to Kickstarter.
2017, I believe, was the release date for the Deluxe Edition, if I'm not mistaken.
That makes sense. By Shane Steely and Jared Tinney, and illustrated by Felidius, which is an interesting singular name. Walk the Plank is a great little game, and I wish I had have gotten it out a lot earlier. I don't know why I haven't so far. I think it's just one of those ones that's just been sitting there. And
it's pretty good.
And yeah, that's right. It's just been collecting dust for no other reason than I'm a lazy gamer. We brought it out a couple of nights ago, learnt the rules really, really quickly. Everyone gets, I think it's 12 cards in their hand in the base game. We haven't actually played the expansion yet.
Which does come in the deluxe set, which we do have. We just haven't played with it yet.
Just haven't done it, yep. And the board setup is literally a ship, three pieces of a plank, and
a kraken.
The kraken, or eternal doom and death. And the game plays, you draw three cards from your deck, place them face down in order left to right. You have to play them left to right one at a time, following after the player who's just played before you. So everyone plays, their first card resolves that action, plays a second, resolves that action, etc., etc. And the first player moves player around clockwise as well. Where this game actually shines is that you have to resolve the action if the action is resolvable with whoever you are with on your plank or on the ship.
Yep.
If that means you are with yourself, you've got three little pirates, and there's only you on that piece of plank, you have to resolve that action with yourself, even if that means knocking yourself to your death.
We should just make sure that it is, like you did say it, but people really truly understand this has got, this is a mechanic which you haven't really talked about in many games, but this is called action programming, which is like I have to play my three cards face down and then lock
and then
the,
I have
the,
to play I have, that action
but I have to lock actions. Them in, so I can't just say I'm going to play this card, wait for my next turn, play the next one. I have to choose three cards, place them face down, and then activate them from left to right, and then I have to do the action if I can do the action. I can't say, oh, no, I don't want to do that one anymore.
Well, you can, but you got to do it.
You still got
to
do it.
But that's like, what happened to me. As
so,
I
so the action
literally killed myself at the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah, so everyone's got three meeples in this game as well.
Three meeples.
That you're trying to keep
three
alive.
Three actions pirate, three per round. And, yeah, you're locking yourself into those actions and have to resolve. Which
I'm
means that
funny.
there's less strategy. There is a strategic element, I suppose, but it's more chaotic because as soon as you play with...
Well,
you have to play with, I think it's three and up. It's three to five players.
Yeah, you need at least three players for this one to be good.
Yeah, three to five. I guess you can always play two players and just have a third one pick three cards randomly and just whatever happens. But
yeah,
you could
do that.
Yeah, there is some strategy element to it. Like especially when it's just me and thee at the end. Hmm. That was a tense moment where I was trying to program the right cards, but I ended up shooting myself in the foot. But that's the way the game works.
That's right.
Yeah, so some of the actions that you can do in this game, so you've got the three different shove cards. So it means I can shove to the right, which means I have to shove a pirate of the player to my right. I have to shove a player to the pirate of my left, or I can shove anyone. Shoving means I need to literally pick a pirate on a tile as the same as one of my pirates and push them forward down the plank. I can extend the plank out to a maximum of three tiles, or I can retract it, which means that if anyone is currently on the plank, if they're on a plank that happens to get retracted, they immediately fall into the sink. That can be funny.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the runaway cards, essentially. You run around, which means I can move a guy around. I can, the card that says, I don't want to die, and move one of my guys off the plank.
Just explain the one you want to explain.
I'll get there in a second. some of these cards have got golden skull and crossbones on them, so they're a bit more powerful, but they can only ever be played. They have to sit out for one round, so you can't play them two rounds in a row.
So they have to recharge after being played.
You can play multiple skull and crossbone cards in multiple rounds, but the same card can't be used two rounds in a row. You've also got the ones that you can either drag someone to the sea. So you can say, you know what, I'm just going to drag Matt to the sea, or I'm going to pull him back to the ship. Take your pick. The one that is the funny one that Matt was referring to is the one that's called charge, which is that you basically pick one of your meeples, and the way that we played it, the way that it's supposed to be played is that you run one of your meeples into a stack of other meeples, and it bumps one meeple forward. So it's like I run into this little tile, and one of my meeples goes, and it gets knocked forward. The way that we played it, because I misread it, and Matt went, you know what, that sounds fun, let's do it that way anyway, which is that we played the charge card, is that if you can run into any tile, and it's basically like a bull rush, everyone in that tile gets bumped forward one. So if you run into a tile with
six people...
It really
needs a 10-pin bowling sound.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
brain.
What I was
exactly
envisioning,
right.
Yeah.
This game, though, the action programming, very reminiscent of games such as Space Alert and other games like that if you're into the board gaming scene. But it's very unique because it's just like, hey, pick three cards and then... Yeah, there is some strategy, but realistically, this is a game that I've played now a few times with you, Matt. And every time, I just find myself giggling, and you look over at me going, ah, crap, he's probably put a charge card or something in there, and I'm just going, let's just see what happens. Yeah. I don't know. And every time I've come out the other end going, it doesn't matter if I win or lose this one. Yeah. It's just like watching the interaction of like in the end of the game, which was you happened to put somehow, you were like, two of your meeples ended up on the edge of the plank.
They were already there, and I managed to get them both back, and you guys both pushed them all the way to the edge of the plank again.
And then
my last move was to retract the plank,
and
it just fell into the oceans.
That was hilarious. Like,
that was pretty good.
Yes, it's very funny.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha.
It's a really quick game. Like, we played a round of this less than 10 minutes every single time.
It was good,
I just want to say, like, as a step up from this, There's a game I love called Black Rose Wars, mm-hmm. where as your mages and you program three cards and you just try and kill each other. Mm-hmm. It's essentially that. It's a much bigger game though, and it will literally take 4 hours to play. Mm. But it had the same vibes yeah. as this. Yeah. Like, it's just on a much bigger scale, yeah. but the exact same vibes as this. Where you program and you may shoot yourself in the foot, but it's cool if you can pull something cool off.
Yeah. 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 Now that that actually sounds like a really fun time. Actually, to yeah. I mean, 4 hours worth could be a lot.
Oh, like it's a big game.
I'm
like
down for that.
It's like a Dead Reckoning size. Yeah. Sort of thing. Yeah.
No, I love that. No, but again, this comes back to the point, Matt, that what you made, which is that because you lock in your actions, you have to. Do what happens. So that means Ralph is on this tile with me, and that means I can do this. But then, oh my God, he moved his dude off the tile, and now I can only do it with me. Like, you literally could walk two of your guys off the plank because Ralph...
You charge into your own guys and knock them into the sea.
Yeah, yep. That's a lot of fun interactions.
It does say in the rules, the very first thing is, you are the worst pirates on the face of the earth, and some of the...
are we walking the plank in the first place?
Because we're the worst pirates on the face of the earth, apparently.
Fair enough.
We are terrible.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun, this one.
Yeah, no, I agree. I really enjoy this one.
Once again, a quick teach. Great fun to play with young kids as well.
Yeah. We played this.
And people who aren't gamers, because, you know, there's not a lot really going on. And even people, because my Jane was a bit hesitant, my girl, she was a bit, didn't really know what was going on. But as soon as she started dealing out the cards and seeing the action resolve, she was like, oh, yeah, yeah.
This is pretty. I mean, tell everyone where you taught this game to us.
Yeah, we're just at the club.
Yeah,
on members draw night, so you know, plenty of noise around. But yeah.
Nice.
Actually, any of those games would probably be pretty good to take to the pub and just.
Yeah, not Black Rose Wars, but everything else is good. Right.
You also got like Taco Cat, Go Cheese Pizza. You also have to be willing to be, you know, make sure you be a bit loud because people are going to be looking at you. Oh, like, yeah, why the hell are they yelling out Taco Cat, Go Cheese Pizza? I'm just trying to eat my lamb roll.
I felt like with Walk the Plank, like the cards, like, you know, you got a card that's maybe what, like 10 centimeters or so. Not 10, that's pretty big, but whatever it is. Mm. I feel like 80% of it was artwork and like 20% of it was what the card actually does.
So I must say that the color choice, the artwork seems a bit muted, I think is the only thing I would have with that.
So this game is using premium cardstock. So in the actual, this is the Kickstarter version of the game.
The deluxe
version. Essentially, in the normal version, the cards aren't normally as big as this. They can be a bit smaller.
Okay.
However, I will also say I do agree with Matt here. I did have a bit of problems with the difference between the blue and the green and the red and the orange. Yeah. There are the card colors because they've got a green to yellow, like a green or a color to yellow gradient. The difference between the green and the blues were not big enough for me. Mm-hmm. And I have no issues with color, but even I was like, hold up, is that a blue or is that a green?
And some of those special cards with the special crossbone symbol, that needs to be bigger.
It needs to be, and sometimes
or more
spot,
highlighted.
Right?
Yeah.
They're not even in the same location on every.
No,
card.
They're not. Yeah.
And I will say, we shouldn't talk it down because we.
We really do enjoy the game.
It's a great game.
I think the artwork is very brown based.
Yeah.
So it's brown and yellow, and so even for people who aren't colorblind, I was looking at going. You know, it doesn't immediately pop to what that card actually is.
No.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a minor complaint.
This is a minor gripe, more so about the design, not the design of the game, about the artwork or the actual, I guess you can say.
Or the color choices.
Yeah, I think it's just the color scheme. Yeah. It just seems, as I said, a bit muted.
It's a bit beige.
Look, the only other problem that I said is the actual problem between the meatballs of the red and orange. Like, they just look very similar. The one looks like brown and one looks like dark orange. On the back of the board.
If that's in the original ones, then the original colors would look a bit more vibrant.
Yeah. Anyway. We really enjoy the game.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
We're really good to play it. Highly recommend. Again, all three of these games.
I haven't played a small box game like Walk the Plank. It's a pretty unique one.
Yeah. So I've not really played another game that has that kind of action programming.
Oh, really?
Sort of fun stuff. At that size. Box that size. So that's why I really enjoy it.
Yep.
Anyway, that's going to bring us to the end of this podcast. I think we've talked.
It's been a big week of gaming.
It has been, and it's only going to get bigger. Look, if you enjoyed what you were listening to tonight, please go to our YouTube page and click the like and subscribe button. Hit that thumbs up and the notification bell. It really does help the podcast. If you're listening to it on your podcasting app of choice, feel free to give us a 5-star rating. We really do appreciate it. We are trying to grow the community. Just check out the links in the description of your podcasting app of choice or YouTube and find the links to our Discord, which is starting to grow, which is really good. And also our website and any of our Facebook groups. We'd love to have you there. Look, thank you, Matt. Thank you, Ralph, for joining us. This has been another fun one. And thank you very much for watching and joining us on this episode of the Board Game Gateway podcast. Until next time, see you later, and thank you, and have a great game. See you then.
What do you know about lead?
Lead? Specifically?
I don't have to tie it back into the podcast. Come on, that was right. I'll loop it back to the
They are building a new one.
Dad said it was good. Dad said it was good.